Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Good afternoon, Tuscaloosa. Good afternoon, Tuscaloosa, internet world. How we doing today on this beautiful Tuesday? Beautiful Tuesday right here in Tuscaloosa, downtown Northport, West Alabama. I hope you guys are all having a wonderful day. We appreciate everybody jumping in and joining us right here on the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com. You guys are watching us on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter. You're listening to us on Spotify, on Apple Music, on Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. We appreciate everybody jumping in and being a part of the Bama Central Broadcasting Network. We want to encourage you guys to go out and listen to our other Bama Central podcasts. We've got our friends All Things Bama with Katie Windham and Austin Hannon. We've got our friends Blue Collar Unplugged with Matthew Gibson, Blake Byler, and Jacob Pickle, the president. Jacob Pickle of Crimson Chaos. You want to get that student perspective and the great basketball analysis, you can find that on Blue Collar Unplugged. You're obviously listening to the Joe Gaither Show, watching the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram, wherever you can find us on the social medias at Joe Gaither 6. You can send us your comments, your questions, your queries, and complaints right there to us at Joe Gaither 6. And we invite you to jump in and join us on the comment side today if you want to be a part of the program. Oh, man, I have that banner looking right with, let's fix that real quick, with Will Miller. Perfect. Let's save that and pop that up. There we go. We're going to be joined today. We are joined today by our friend, Mr. Will Miller of BamaCentral.com. You can follow him on the Twitter machine at RealWBMiller for all of his great Alabama followings, all of his great Discovery, Atlanta Braves, Baltimore Orioles, San Francisco Giants, UFC, all kinds of MMA action as well. But we are here to talk a bunch of Alabama Crimson Tide. So good morning, Will. How's your day going? Great to see you.
How are things, Joe? I'm good. I'm happy to be here once again. And yeah, like you said, if you guys want all sorts of random thoughts live during fight nights on Saturday nights, you know exactly where to go. I'm your one-stop destination for all sorts of different MMA commentaries, opinions, whatever it may be. And I'm really excited for the pay-per-view this weekend in Boston. So I'm feeling really great, Joe. Been great being back in Tuscaloosa these last several days, getting back in the saddle, and just really excited for the fall.
Absolutely. Well, why don't you, before we jump into really the sports side of things, why don't you give us an update on the calendar here? The students are back in town. Rush has started. If you are a female in Tuscaloosa, you're likely participating in Rush in some sort of capacity. And we wish all those ladies good luck. We wish all those ladies good luck. I know that's going to be a taxing experience. But for you, Will, where are we as far as the school count? Does school start next week? Does school start next Tuesday, Wednesday? Is that the plan next to the 22nd? 23rd is just update us, the ones of us who are not in school.
It is next Wednesday, the 23rd, which is approximately a week later than usual, just on the average calendar. This is my third year coming in and what it's usually been. And I'm very happy because not only that, but they also brought back fall break, which they kind of did away with last year. And that was not my favorite in terms of decisions pertaining to the academic calendar, but I'm glad the ship has been righted. And hopefully it will be just as enjoyable as it was in 2021 when all I did during it was watch the World Series. Well, I'm really happy that that's back. And the start of the school year, it always sneaks up on you. But happy to have a few extra days to kind of adjust to things here in Tuscaloosa being back and also just have a few extra days to relax.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you're hopeful. Give me a quick baseball update because you know I'm a casual. Are your Orioles in playoff position?
The O's are leading the American League East right now. If it were to end today, they would be right there in the playoffs. They would be the number two seed in the American League because the American League Central is, all sorts of different thoughts have been shared throughout the baseball world for years about that division. So I am of the mind that the less said, the better. That division has effectively been handed to Minnesota by default based on the other team's activities at the trade deadline. So it's looking like Baltimore, if the pace keeps up, could be the number two seed in the American League and feeling really good about themselves. The Baby Birds, they're coming out of an extensive rebuild that I think was pretty ugly. John Angelos, please do not suspend me for that. The Braves are on the other side in the National League East, best team in baseball.
They're wiping away, right? Yeah.
Best team in baseball, and I'm excited to get to see them tomorrow night against the Yankees. They really put it on the Yankees last night, and tonight, Luis Severino, who's had a not great year on the hill for the Yankees, is pitching in Atlanta against this vaunted lineup. So I'm worried for him. I like Luis Severino. I'm up and down on the Yankees. I like Luis Severino, but I fear what tonight might bring for him if he's not able to get into an early rhythm against a lineup that's the best offense in the sport, and there's not a whole lot of debate about it.
Well, we know a lot of our listeners and viewers are big-time Braves fans, so by proxy, I will cheer for all of our listeners and viewers' happiness, and I'll cheer for your happiness as well. Usually, that's what I do. If I'm not, like, real passionate about a team in a sport, then I'm like, well, who do my friends like? What will make them happy? Because, you know, I do have a Yankees hat, but if the Yankees win or lose, it's like, boo-hoo or yay. I'm not really living or dying with that. So really, all my friends are happy with the outcomes. That will make me happy as well. We didn't bring you in to talk about baseball because, you know, it's to the tail end. Alabama baseball is concluded. We haven't gotten started with fall ball. We brought you in, Will, because you are the foremost expert on Alabama soccer. We'll talk Alabama soccer in just a little bit. But we obviously want to start with what carries our water, Alabama football. Alabama football carries the water right here at BamaCentral.com. We want to encourage you guys to follow us at BamaCentral.com, especially be looking for us at 4:30 today. Nick Saban jumps up to the podium and will give us 10, 12 minutes worth of coach speak. So we'll bring that to you at about 4:30. You can follow myself at JoeGaither6, at Austin Hannon SI. Is Katie underscore Wyndham? I think that's what it is. I think Katie is Katie underscore Wyndham.
I think Austin is just Austin Hannon underscore now. I think he took the SI out of the hand.
Okay. All right. Well, Austin, you can look at his profile this morning doing a breakdown on Jalen Milroe. So why don't we start? Okay, I got two questions, but we'll start with the quarterbacks. We'll get the Will Miller perspective on the quarterbacks. I've been blabbering nonstop for the last 3 or 4 days about the quarterbacks. And then we'll have kind of the main topic today will be what is the strongest position group on the Alabama Crimson Tide, offense, defense, special teams, wherever, what individual position group will be the strongest going into 2023. But let's start with the headlines. Let's start with the main topic, the most important position in football, the quarterbacks. Will, we're now about a week and change into fall camp. We've had four days of pads. The boys practiced last night at 7:30. Thank the Lord they practiced in the evening by the time the sun went down. Did you know the heat index yesterday was 113? Gross. But what do you think? Where do we stand in the Will Miller zone at the quarterback position?
I've said since the beginning I think Milroe will win the job. And he had some moments last season where he displayed one of his best traits, which is his great athleticism, some of the best. And I think that obviously plays in his favor. And that's an advantage I feel like he's going to have based on what I've seen. But throwing the ball, A&M last season, huge spot start moment. Probably not his best night slinging the leather around. And it happens, obviously, like I said, that was a big moment, and stuff happens. But I think that the public eye is going to gravitate towards that one game at this exact juncture. We know the guarded nature of Alabama football practices. We know that you're not going to see everything that goes into fall camp. You're not going to see everything or even close to everything that, that happens on this kind of path of developing, not just Jalen Milroe, but also all the guys in the quarterback room, even the likes of Holstein and Dylan Lonergan. And so I think that you go with what's there, you look at what's there, and that, that can tend to kind of, you can kind of make some predeterminations about Jalen Milroe's ability throwing the ball based on that one game, when I don't necessarily think that's going to be entirely accurate. I mean, he's had, you know, a long time of practice, not to mention, I mean, I'm sure he watched all the film there was to watch on that game with angles you or I aren't even aware of. So long story short, I've said it for a long time. I think the job will end up being his. I have not wavered on this opinion, and that's not to discredit anybody else in the race here, but I feel good about Jalen Milroe from an athleticism standpoint, from an experience standpoint as well, and I think that he will shore up any holes in his game to an extent that you could feel good about trotting him out there as the starting quarterback.
Well, what do you think about the thought process? Because I'm with you with that. And I will admit I did have a little bit of wavering thinking that Ty Simpson was about to steal the job. What do you think about the thought process that says Jalen Milroe is going to get the first crack at things, but by the end of the year, by a couple games in, Ty Simpson's going to steal the job and take it and never look back?
Well, we've seen that before, right, with Blake Barnett and Jalen Hurts, and I dare say that worked out pretty good for all parties concerned. And if you want proof of that, go look up Jalen Hurts' latest contract information. We'll just say he's set now. So I kind of see where folks are going with it, and it could happen. I'm not going to rule it out. I definitely don't think that the coaching staff is going to, just to use a fighting analogy here, I don't think if they get put in a bad position on the mat, they're just going to accept it. I think that they're going to go with their personnel that they have and give it a shot, give something else a shot if need be. A lot of people are confident in Ty Simpson. I absolutely believe that that extends to the stakeholders in that decision, being the coaching staff and also the team. I think they're confident in his abilities, and why not? He also has some experience. He was, just because he wasn't dumped into the bright lights against Texas A&M, he's still seen some playing time, and he's had that same, you know, time of developing, honing his game as Jalen Milroe has. But I don't know if you're going into it with that mindset on the front end. I don't know if you, either one, doesn't really matter who you trot out first. I don't think that you're putting that person out there with the idea being, okay, I'm expecting to replace him in 2 weeks. I absolutely don't think that's the way to do things. And obviously, I did not win 6 national championships, unless you want to count NCAA 14 titles, in which case I'm right up there. So I'm not the foremost expert on that side of things, on coaching and on personnel. But I don't think that would be the mindset, depending on who, or does it, indifferent of who gets the job. I think you want to go with that person for the long haul, and you hope that they are able to measure up to that.
Yeah. So yesterday on the program, I basically laid out that this quarterback battle will be very similar to the 2011 quarterback battle between AJ McCarron and Phillip Sims, where both players ended up getting reps against, I believe it was Kent State. We looked at the box score yesterday, and kind of both players getting reps against Penn State. Both of them not really having great games. 2 interceptions apiece for both of them, but AJ moving the ball much, much more efficiently. And then you took AJ McCarron as the starter up to Happy Valley to Penn State, and the rest is, as we say, history. So I wonder if that's going to be kind of how this plays out with – look, well, you or I could call. We love Tommy Rees. We like what we're going to see from Tommy Rees. But you or I could hold the play sheet and play number one, play number three, play number 12, 28, and, you know, end up beating MTSU based on talent alone. How much do you think, and to confirm this point, I basically went on to say you don't really need to have the quarterback battle determined until that first game against Ole Miss. You've got MTSU, Texas, USF, 3 weeks, and then you play Ole Miss. Of course, everyone wants to beat Texas, the high-profile matchup. But in the grand scheme of things, you're beating USF and you're beating MTSU really on talent alone, in my opinion. If you lose to Texas, every single one of your goals are still out there in front of you with you win the West, you get to the SEC title, you win the title game, you're in the playoff, and then you can go from there. How urgent, you know, Coach Saban has talked about baking the cake, the cake's still baking. How urgent do you feel like, or do you disagree that everybody, that Coach Saban wants to have the cake baked and pulled out and put on, you know, cut up by the time we're playing Texas in that second game?
Well, Joe, to start out with something I often say, the court of public opinion is a heck of a thing, and I can guarantee you that if there's even close to a loss to Texas, pitchforks will go in the air, and it will probably not be a pretty scene. And nobody wants that. And like I said, I don't think that the coaching staff is just going to be accepting of a bad position. I don't disagree with you about Middle Tennessee and USF. USF, one of my favorite group of five teams, being one of the worst in the FBS over the past half decade or so, unfortunately. I'm not going to be making any picks or propositions like last year. My group of five pick this year is Tulane. But it feels to me that you definitely want to have this slotted by the regular season, if at all possible. I see the other possibility that maybe you don't, and maybe for that first game you can live with it, but that's not the front-end mentality, like I stated on the previous question. That is your last resort in a very real way. You definitely want to have all your ducks in a row as soon as possible. And these schedules are unrelenting, man. You have Middle Tennessee to open the season. Great. Should win probably by a sizable margin. But then you're going straight in to face Texas, gave you all you could handle last year in the Austin heat, which was very unrelenting from what I'm told, and similar to yesterday's. And now you're going to have them on your turf in front of your fans, and they are going to want to see great high-level quarterback play in that matchup, if no one else. I think, once again, to make a long story short, it's not the first resort for the coaching staff to say, well, we will just cycle between guys. They'll do it if need be. Absolutely, I would expect that. But it's not what they want to do first things first.
All right, so last thing on the quarterbacks before we transition to, I guess, our main football topic, our bigger, broader topic of what is the strongest position group on this team. You're looking at Jalen Milroe. You're looking at Ty Simpson. If you're Tommy Rees, Tommy Rees earlier when he did his pro day, basically said he's going to be running the Alabama offense. We know what the Alabama offense has looked like over the last 5 years under Bryce and Tua and Jalen and Mac, and had a lot of success throwing the football. Are you not? Or do you believe Tommy Rees? Do you believe that he's going to be running? He said, "Oh, I'm coming to run the Alabama system. I'm not going to be running the Notre Dame system." Do you believe him, or do you think that, you know, the last 3 months, all we've heard is, "Oh, we're going to get back to pounding the football. It's going to be back to 2011 Alabama, 2009 Alabama." With Jalen Milroe, if he's the heir apparent, if he's the incumbent, with his skill set, do you believe Tommy Rees saying, "Oh, I'm not going to be running, you know, the Notre Dame offense"? What do you think the mixture, I guess, is probably the better question. What do you think the mixture will be as far as the Tommy Rees system versus the mixture of Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, Brian Daboll, Mike Locksley, all that together? How do you think that's going to play out?
Well, the Notre Dame system lost to Marshall, so I can see why he might not want to bring that to an SEC school. But I think part of coaching is using the talent available to you. And we know that Jalen Milroe is a great athlete. We kind of have hammered that even on this program alone and in other discussions. Part of it is going to be using that as a coach. And there's a potential to use that in ways that maybe Alabama faithful hasn't seen as much of throughout the past several years. I mean, make no mistake about it, these previous quarterbacks, like, they could run, but you weren't going to see it as often. You're not going to see Mac Jones run the football as much as you're going to see Jalen Milroe run the football. I think Mac Jones was comfortable where he was in the pocket, throwing the ball to Jaylen Waddle and Devontae Smith. But it feels to me like there's absolutely going to be every intent to go back to this quote-unquote Alabama system. And I definitely think Tommy Reese, I mean, he's a brilliant mind. He's a great young coach and played for a long time at the highest levels, of course, as a quarterback at Notre Dame. I remember watching him when I was growing up. And I think he would have, in that regard, he would have no problem assimilating and putting that on the field because he's smart enough to do it. And he's got the experience to do it as a coach. And he has the athletes to do it because this is Alabama. Like Kevin Steele said, this is Alabama. There is talent here. He has the high-level talent to put that on the field. But it does come down to using your personnel and using their strengths. And I think that there can be some variance based on that, especially if Jalen Milroe is the quarterback.
All right, so I said last question, but no, not last. This might be the last question. Where are you sending for Tyler Buchner? Everybody, you bring in Buchner as the transfer quarterback, and he's obviously got the previous relationship with Tommy Reese. At this point, it seems like he's a pretty distant third. Are you even considering him as a starting option?
It's tough to say. Like I said, we haven't seen everything, and we know that Tyler Buchner has – he's been a little behind on the playbook, obviously, because he came in and he's behind these other two guys in terms of experience at Alabama. Like I mentioned, Ty Simpson, Jalen Milroe, both seeing the field last year in Crimson, Tyler Buchner being over at Notre Dame. Obviously, with Tommy Reese, and there's that connection there. But I'm not sure what that does for him if, like we said on the previous point, Tommy Reese is bringing in the Alabama system and he's studying the playbook with Tyler Buchner. It's new to both guys. So what does that do for Tyler Buchner? I definitely think that talent-wise, he's right up there. I think he's a very talented football player, but it comes down to how is he going to be able to fit in coming in when he did, and has he done that? Who knows? I'm not certain of it. I don't know if he's 100% with the playbook yet. I think that he's got the talent. I think that if it had been an even competition in terms of timing, maybe you'd hear his name being floated around more, but I don't see him winning the job, and I'm not really sure where he stands at that point if he doesn't.
All right, one parallel from a previous – basically, I've been trying to drag from the previous quarterback competitions, 2016, Barnett and Hurts, 2015 with Jake Coker and Cooper Bateman, you know,
2014, Blake Sims and Jake Coker.
Right. So going to 16, going back to the – which was really – I mean, besides the Jalen Tua, 16 was your last real preseason quarterback battle. You saw Blake Barnett say, adios, I'm gone, basically after the USC game. He didn't stick around. He jumped right in the transfer portal and was at Arizona State like a week later.
Then South Florida.
Yeah, then South Florida. Will we see, are we worried about, oh my gosh, Ty Simpson, if he didn't win the job, or Jalen Milroe, if you get passed over? We see one of those guys, are they going to stick it out the whole year? Or are they going to jump right in the portal? What will be the buy-in? Will you have the Jalen Hurts-level buy-in? Oh, Tua beat me out in preseason. I'm still going to work hard. And by the time my number's called in the SEC championship game, I'm going to rewrite my whole story.
Well, my mother is not going to like this, but let's remember Jalen Hurts did not finish his career at Alabama. He ended at Oklahoma, and he had a very successful stint there. You know, points to the guy, it worked out. Again, look at his contract numbers. Me, I would love to have those numbers. Let's just say that. But in terms of sticking it out, I think that you will see that. I really do, and I think that it's a competition. You have winners and you have losers. I think these are team guys. Hearing the players talk, I think that there really is a focus on the team that in some areas maybe has been lacking, which is encouraging because, I mean, that's what being on a team is all about, even going back to the days of, you know, Pop Warner ball back in, you know, Lord knows how long ago at this point for guys like us. But bringing that back to the main point, I do think that also, like you said, there could be opportunities for these other guys. We don't know how things are going to shake out, what's going to happen. I mean, it is college football. Fundamentally, you have to recognize that you don't know everything on the front end, and you're not going to, and that's part of what makes it so great. There could be opportunities for these guys even down the line, and I think that they're hungry for that chance to prove themselves, but I also think they'll be hungry to prove themselves on this team and at Alabama, and I think that they might stick around.
We're talking about Will Miller. You can follow him on Twitter at RealWBMiller. We appreciate him jumping in and joining us right here on the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. We're having a great Tuesday. I just looked at the weather, my man. It's 80-something degrees outside. The heat index is not really that high. The guys are practicing at 2:30, so maybe Coach Saban will be in a nice little mood. I'll ask you at the end what we should talk to Coach Saban about at 4:30. You know, without seeing practice, it's so hard to ask about specific things or specific players. Let me ask you about what you heard yesterday, because you were in the Naylor Stone media room yesterday with Katie Windham, Matthew Gibson, and Austin Hannon. Bama Central on deck yesterday in the Naylor Stone media room. You guys better be following Bama Central. Jaheim Otis and J.C. Latham were at the podium. And Jaheim Otis really listened to both press conferences and brought up something that I think is a unique or an interesting point. People asked him about the differences from this year to from last year to this year. And he talked about really, okay, last year we had different players stepping up and being vocal leaders at different points in time. Obviously kind of an ode to Will Anderson, an ode to Henry Toa, probably a little bit of nod to Jordan Battle. He says the difference was that this year, pre-snap and pre the defense going out, and you know, before we go out and do something, it's not just one guy saying, hey, rah-rah, let's go do this. It's the entire defense getting together, not just in little position groups, but all 11, all 20, you know, everybody who's going to be involved in the defense is getting together at one time, and they said, oh, and the offense is doing the same. It's not just Bryce Young. It's not just your Evan Neal's from 2 years ago. It's everybody kind of having that unity. Did you notice that yesterday? Was that something that stood out to you as well? And if so, I think it's a little bit of maybe a negative mark on the last 2 years' teams. But how positive can that be for this year's squad?
Well, as I said, Joe, I'm just seeing a real team mindset from these players, and it's encouraging because when you're part of a unit and everybody's bought in, it would amaze you what things you're able to do. I have not played Division I football. I played for 3 weeks in middle school, bit of a different world. But I'll tell you, I have done a lot of group projects, and those can go all different directions. And when all four or five people are bought in on those group projects, you're probably going to get a really good grade. So it feels to me like with everybody being bought in, you have to feel good because everybody is focused. Everybody has these goals that are shared. They're committed to the goals. They're focused on doing it the right way. They're focused on working hard, on being about the team. And that really is what I've noticed. I'm noticing that. I'm noticing guys being open to that, taking on that leadership role, that mentality of I'm going to be a leader, which you want to see out of your players. You develop them for however many years, and you want to see them blossom into great men and leaders in addition to football players. They're taking that leadership mindset. I'm really encouraged by these comments from these players. I think that there's been a real shift in mindset and a productive change going into this season.
All right, so we are probably practice number 8 or so, I believe it is today. So we'll hear from Coach Saban in a little while. Right at the beginning of fall camp, Coach Saban highlighted several different position groups. And he named names about which one, you know, who he's feeling confident in. So we're going to take that little who's Coach Saban feeling confident in. Obviously, the quarterbacks have our big attention. Oh, my gosh, who's going to be taking the snaps? Who's leading this team? But outside of the quarterbacks, you have a lot of a roster that's loaded with talent. So let's just play a game. And, Will, I'll let you go first since you're the guest. What do you think, or going into 2023 with 18 days left until Alabama plays MTSU, what is the strongest position group right now on this Alabama Crimson Tide team?
I kind of cycle on this, Joe, and I feel like it could be any number of groups, you know, depending on the day. But I feel really good about this running back room, my friend. I really feel good about this running back room. And I think that there's multiple really capable backs. It's not like the days back in 15 where you're just riding Derrick Henry for 40 carries a game. And while that had great results and he won a Heisman, I think that having a rushing attack with three and four really good backs can be just as effective when you consider all the talents that these guys bring. And not only that, but the ways they can help out the quarterbacks. Maybe there is a learning curve when you get on the field at the quarterback position this year. It helps to have that behind you when you can hand the ball off and or you can throw the ball out of the backfield or on slant routes or bubbles or things of that nature. They can help out the quarterbacks. They're really talented in their own right. And I feel really good about this position group. There is some youth in this position group. There's also some experience, but I feel really good.
All right, so I'm glad you said running backs. I'm going to offshoot on a conversation I had last night in a group chat with mostly non-Alabama fans. The name Damian Harris got brought up, and I'm not always a Damian Harris fan. I basically said, oh, he's at the bottom of the talent pool on the Nick Saban starting running backs. And people gave me a lot of hell. Oh, my gosh, he's a two-time champ. Oh, my gosh, he ran for 1,000 yards twice, this, that, and the other. And my point to all this, and you could chime in on where you feel about Damian Harris. That's A-okay. It's no problem. My point to got brought up. Oh, somebody said, oh, he's better than Jace McClellan. I said, no, he's not a better running back than Jace McClellan. And then my follow-up to that was, but Jace won't be the best running back on the roster right now. So a couple of different questions and conversations off that. Who are you feeling? I mean, with the running back room, I agree, very, very strong. What are you feeling like is the leader in the clubhouse, how he's going to divvy up the reps, divvy up the, you know, who's getting what? How does the talent break down in the running back room? And then I guess if you want to comment on where Damian Harris stands, please feel free to.
You know, I really think Jace has kind of slept on. I mean, I like what I saw from the kid last year. That run against Texas is going to go down forever. And it was one of the best rushing plays I saw in all of college football, all of big-time college football last year. So, I mean, not to lay all my eggs in one basket based on one play, but I really like Jace McClellan, and I think he's going to do really well for Alabama this season. And he's going to kind of fly under the radar when it comes to that position group at the Power 5 level. I think he's going to show some people this season. So I'm optimistic about him. I'm optimistic about some of the youth. I think guys like Justice Haynes who are coming in and have the ability to make an instant impact. That's part of what makes this room so great. You have guys that can come in. They have a lot of different skill sets, but also that you can have young guys coming in and making themselves known immediately. And that's really important to have because you don't want these guys to come in and if you can avoid it and have them sit on the bench for a little while, for, you know, 2 years, maybe 3 years, if they can come in and impact the team day one. And I think that Nick Saban is receptive to that. If they're going to come in and have a positive impact on the team, that they're going to have an opportunity to play. And you want these guys to be in a position where they're going to have an opportunity to play, even if they're young. And if they're young, you feel good about it because then they can blossom and be good for 3 years, 4 years. Who knows if guys are going to stay for their senior year or not. As for Damian Harris, I'm like you, Joe. I am up and down on my opinions of Damian Harris. At times I have said he's the most overrated player of the Nick Saban era. I do not believe that is true. I would still put him on my top 10 list. No disrespect to Damian Harris. I love the guy. I'm loving his success in the NFL. All that being said, I definitely think he is not at the bottom of the talent pool of the Nick Saban running backs. I don't think that's him. I think that he was another guy that kind of flew under the radar. But, I mean, the best is a pretty high bar. You've got your Heisman Trophy winners. You've got your Heisman finalist in Trent Richardson, who in a past life was one of the best collegiate players in the country. And watching him juke people out every weekend was a favorite pastime of mine, also in what seems like a past life. But as for Damian, I would love to go watch another highlight tape, and I'm probably going to do that later on today after I've sorted everything I need to do, just to see if my opinions are current on Damian Harris. I really like the guy, but you're never going to catch me saying that he was the best at his position in the Nick Saban era. I don't think that's true at all.
No. I had it with I think, and this is controversial as well, but I think Najee is my number one overall ever.
I could get with that, Joe. I really could.
And Derrick Henry close to Derrick Henry, what you do down there on the plains, what 40-something carries, absolutely just amazing. But I think Najee's overall like well-roundedness skill set puts him over the top. And then you look at the numbers, he's the all-time leading rusher and all-time leading touchdowns. So I went Najee, my list, because last night I had to write it out. I was getting heated with my friends talking about, oh, Damien is so good, X, Y, Z. I'm like, no, he was not. Damien played behind one of the best offensive lines. And, you know, they said, oh, two-time national champion. I said, where was Damien when they won the 15 national championship? Oh, he was watching Derrick Henry run. Where was Damien in the 17 national championship? Oh, he was watching Najee Harris run. If Damien Harris was really that strong, when Bo Scarborough broke his leg in against Clemson, you'd still win the game, you know, behind Damien.
Scarborough over Damien Harris, by the way.
Yes, yes. So I just went offshoot with that and had a I don't know. Maybe I have a bad personal bias, and maybe that's something I need to re-look at. But to me, Damien Harris belonged in the Brian Robinson, and the Brian Robinson kind of maximized his ability category.
Well, I guess it comes down to what type of back you prefer. From this conversation, I kind of determined that you and I like the hard nose, really big, you know, close to 300-pound back that's just going to run over you. I love watching that as much as the next guy. And for me, if I'm building a position group, I think that's what plays in today's game, with these lines stacking up to 350-plus pounds and being huge. J.C. Latham is billed as, what, 360 pounds? The man is massive. It never ceases to amaze me, Joe. I'm 6'2", 175. It never ceases to amaze me how big these SEC football players are, regardless of the position. So for me, I think you've got to match fire with fire in today's game. I don't think that backs like Damien are going to have as much success, regardless of how shifty they are, regardless of how good their vision is. And some people may have a different opinion. They may think that running back that has the ability to get outside more frequently is going to do better. I respond to that by saying these big backs that Alabama's had, these Derrick Henrys, these Najee Harris's, even Brian Robinson, have had the ability to get outside, even in spite of being so massive that they could probably knock you and I into next week without much thought. So that's the type of back I prefer. I want the big, even Bo Scarborough as well. I want the big, hard-nosed running back, and other people, they might disagree. And I think largely that's where that comes from. That, and they look at stats and think that the stats tell the whole story.
The Trent Richardson dead leg against Ole Miss will live forever. We'll live forever. So everybody who wants to hate on Trent's professional career, all right, whatever, that's fine. The 3 years where he was here in Tuscaloosa, oh my gosh, he was one of the greatest running backs ever. Real quick, before we're gonna appreciate Julian Lee and Mr. Stingray joining us on the comment side. Both of you guys hanging out with us on Facebook, we appreciate everybody hanging out with us. You can jump in on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, send us your comments, participate in the show at JoeGaither6 if you want to do that. We appreciate everybody tuning in. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and Spotify. You hit on J.C. Latham playing at 360 pounds. Look, the last time we saw him on a scale, it was at 330 or so. So what do you feel? Like, obviously, he's being coached. He's being
intimidated.
Intimidating is fine. He's being coached on the weight gain side from Amy Bragg and from David Ballou, and he addressed both of those, the diet and the workout side of things yesterday. Are you confident in JC playing at 360 pounds?
I am confident in that, because one thing that's going to go into the coaching, like you mentioned, is how to play with it. I mean, you and I, we're fight fans, and we know all about people's adventures with weight classes and all these journeys with weight. You'll remember when we had Eric Anders on back at Tide in December, and we talked with him about his weight cuts and how he makes the weight. Another great Alabama football player in his own right, long time player and former national champion in the early Saban era, for those of you so inclined. So obviously we're familiar with how that can affect people, and I really think that he has more than likely been given the lowdown on how to adjust and how to play with that. And not only that, but what I see in J.C. Latham is a guy that's focused on the right things, like I said earlier on in the show. and a guy that's willing to do what it takes to win. So obviously gaining this weight is what it takes to win, and playing with that weight and playing well with that weight is what it takes to win. So he's going to get down and dirty and do whatever needs to be done, I feel like, in order to maximize his potential with this added. It's got to be muscle mass, right? The dude is fit. He is in great shape, and he's 360 pounds. It, again, never ceases to amaze me.
Defies absolute logic. It absolutely, like, he looks great at 360, and you're like, oh,
if you're a fan, you're glad he's on your team.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Will, I'm glad that you picked running backs because I think that's a great choice for the strongest position group on the team. But I'm gonna take this conversation to the other side of the ball. And before we do that, I'm gonna hear we're gonna play a little Nick Saban clip from Saturday talking about who I think is the strongest position group on the team. This is Coach Saban talking about the versatility in the secondary. My favorite, my pick for strongest position group on the team.
Question for you about the versatility in the secondary. Who are a few of the guys who have the highest comfort level playing more than one role back there?
We got a bunch. I mean, we're playing guys all over the place. So, Terrion can play different spots. Quilly can play different spots. Malachi can play just about everywhere. Jalen Key can play multiple positions. Trying to develop, Tony Mitchell to be able to play multiple positions. We need to have a lot of guys that can do that. Smitty can play a couple different things. Christian Story can play a couple different things. I mean, that's one of the things that we try to do in camp. We got guys rolling all over the place. It does sort of sometimes affect the repetitions that a guy gets at a certain position. But I think it's important that guys have a background and a basic knowledge of information. So if we get guys injured during the season, we can move guys around and have a chance to get the best people on the field. It's the same thing on the offensive line. You know, guys got to be able to play multiple positions.
Nick Saban highlighting versatility in the secondary on Saturday. And so it made me scratch out some names. It made me scratch out my own. And if you can go on to ourlads.com. I love going on to Our Lads and looking at their depth charts and how they have things lined up. But goodness gracious, Will, look at the secondary and tell me who the heck you're leaving off the field. You think about Kool-Aid and Terrion Arnold basically locked in as cornerbacks one and two, wherever you want to slot them. You can slot them far side cornerback and near side cornerback, but they're probably getting work at both ends. Malachi Moore, been on the team going into his fourth year. I mean, he's been a stud since he was a freshman here from Hewitt-Trussville. What was he? He was an all-freshman defender. And then you think about what you've got with Trey Amos, Jalen Key, two guys who you brought in for the transfer portal, Caleb Downs, your five-star freshman from Georgia, and then not even to mention Devontae Smith, who has seemed to grow into a role that he's going to be counted on a lot. Obviously, you saw him at Fan Day basically play the starting safety role and had a lot of good reports from his Saturday day. And then Coach throws out Tony Mitchell, who we all know had the spring break incident, but he was a five-star player out of Thompson. Like, what are you – I'm pumped for this defense. I think it's going to be – a massive challenge passing against this Alabama defense. So I think the secondary running back is a great pick, but if I had to go a second direction, I think secondary is my next big spot for strongest position group on the team. What are your thoughts on the back end?
Well, Joe, I really think that the secondary is going to be one of the main beneficiaries of the things I talked about earlier, which is more of a team-oriented situation, a leadership mindset. I think that you're going to see huge benefits with that in the secondary, especially with some younger guys, some guys coming in from the portal and making their home here in this program. And I think that they're going to come together and be really strong. Any way you stack it, you ask who you leave off the field, I'm really not sure. And you remember last season after the Utah State game when all the cornerbacks saw action. I think earlier in the season, you could see all of these guys play and have a chance to prove themselves. And I think they are a really, really good group. I think that Kool-Aid obviously is a guy that's getting a lot of draft love, and rightfully so. He was a fantastic piece of the defense last year, and I think that he's going to be great. He's going to be a great tackler. He's going to be a great ball hawk this season through the air as well. Feel good about Terrion Arnold. Why not? The guy's one of the best athletes on the team. You know, he's got his share of basketball prowess as well. Great athlete on this team. I agree, Joe. If I had to pick a number two position group, it would be the secondary. And I think that you're going to see great strides from the secondary this season. And if you want to talk about getting back to an Alabama standard, does that not start and end with defense? I mean, I know I watched the 2011 National Championship game where LSU didn't cross the 50-yard line until there were 8 minutes left in the game. I saw it. I remember it like it was yesterday. And so these improvements on defense, if you're a fan, again, you got to love it.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, I love you bringing up 2011. You can think about 11. You can think about 09 with Kareem Jackson and Javier Arenas and what they were doing, Mark Barron in the back end. You can think about 2016 with Mika Fitzpatrick and Humphrey, Marlon Humphrey as well on the back end. They turned the football over like crazy. And
I love for Anthony Averett, Joe.
Oh, he's a good player. Yeah, a good player. Oh, that's your Baltimore love, isn't it? A little love for Baltimore. But I just think when you saw what you saw at a fan day was nice from Terry and Arnold. Him, people gave him a lot of hell last year because he was the one guy you could throw at, and everybody wanted Eli Ricks to get out there because of his natural talent. Oh gosh. Frustrating for me watching Eli Ricks this weekend get a pick six and like, congratulations, he got a pick six in his first NFL game, but it just feels like a massive like
on the Alabama North Eagles.
What could have been if he'd have been able to get his brain correct or get his mind right the whole year, all year. You think about this defense, who are you deciding to throw at? Because you're not throwing at Kool-Aid. And then you think, okay, well, if I'm not throwing at Kool-Aid, I got to pick Terran Arnold or Trey Amos, two experienced guys. I mean, people don't realize, Will, that Terran Arnold didn't play any corner, did not play corner until he came to Alabama. And so last year, it was really your first time. Hey, you're going to play corner. Hey, we're throwing you out there in the SEC. Oh, you're going to be the one guy getting picked on all the time. I'm really looking forward to the second year of Terry and Arnold. I think that maybe it's just a little bias, a little personal love, and I don't really know where that comes from. I guess I get defensive when players kind of get picked on or get on the bad side of the fans, because I feel like, you know, they don't really know how much work goes into these positions and how much work these guys are doing. I'm really expecting a great year out of Terry and Arnold.
Joe, I agree, and I think you raise a great point. We've talked about, especially with Jalen Milroe, just the getting thrown to the wolves. And you're glad when those guys have success, but on what level, when the negatives come, were you not expecting some of that to happen? This is not, I mean, this is not Pop Warner. This is not middle school. This is the highest levels of the sport outside of the professional realm. Some have argued in certain years, even higher than some in the professional realm. Could Alabama beat the Cleveland Browns debates from days gone by? I think that 2016 team could have done it. No, I'm just kidding. But my 13-year-old self definitely did spend a few weeks thinking that at the time. But all this to say, Joe, I think the improvement's going to be more than what people are thinking. And I think that his confidence is going to go through the roof. And when you complete that process, or when you see growth in that process, you're also correspondingly going to see a complete player that is really scary. And you brought up, who are you going to test? I use a phrase Israel Adesanya brought up. They're going to have to throw and hope at times. Some teams are going to have to throw and hope.
All right, so we're at 45 minutes right here on the show, and we're talking to Will Miller. You can follow him at RealWB Miller on the Twitter machine, covering and following all the Alabama sports, as well as mixed martial arts, Major League Baseball, and several other interesting avenues. So follow him on the Twitter machine at RealWB Miller. We're proud to have him as one of our team members at Bama Central. We're actually going to transition right now, Mr. Will, to soccer. Wes Hart and Felicia Knox were at the podium yesterday, and they spent some time, you know, kind of giving a soccer preseason preview sort of a thing. We were at the Alabama Soccer Complex last week watching Alabama's exhibition against Tennessee, a 2-2 draw. I talked about it on the program just a little bit. If you want to listen to that, you can go back and hear it on any of the platforms we've already outlined. But Alabama Soccer is playing its first official game on Thursday. We are the home of all things Alabama Crimson Tide right here at Bama Central, not just football. We'll be there on Thursday. You'll be there, and I'll be right behind you. So we'll be at the Alabama Soccer Complex on Thursday to watch Alabama take on DePaul at 7 p.m. Last year, DePaul, I didn't want men's soccer for them. I wanted women's soccer for them. Right there. Last year, women's soccer for DePaul, they were this will be their first game. This will be their first game, and last year their record, their record was 3-12-1 last year. So it might be a little bit of a layup for Alabama. They have exhibitions. They've already played exhibitions against Wisconsin and Milwaukee. I don't see any sort of stats from that. So this will be their first official game as well. What are we thinking about Alabama soccer, their season as a whole? Obviously, as we look at DePaul, it's probably going to be a little bit of a good warm-up test for them. But what do you think about this Alabama soccer team?
Well, Joe, with DePaul, I raise you this. Is Alabama not the preeminent example in the sport of preseason expectations do not tell the whole story?
There.
But I feel good about this team. I watched last year's team run roughshod over the SEC, go undefeated in conference play in the regular season, make it all the way to the College Cup. Seemed like nothing could go wrong at a lot of points last season. And I see a unit this year that is different. You lose a lot of key players. Coach Hart talked about that at length yesterday. Lost some players that are undoubtedly huge assets to not only Alabama, but whichever team they're on at a given time, including their current pro and World Cup national sides. Great success for those ladies at the next level. And I think this team still brings a lot of experience. They do bring a lot of new faces, bring a couple of really strong names in from the portal that are really going to help. And I think this team also has a very high ceiling, ranked number 7 in the preseason polls, picked to finish 2nd in the SEC, a lot of players on the watch list, which that part's not new. They had a fair amount of players on the watch list last year. But I think definitely they're not going to have that element of surprise, but they're still going to be a contender. I absolutely think that they're a contender. And a lot of it is, like I talked about earlier, using your personnel to their strengths. That doesn't just apply to football. That applies to anything. If you do that, I think it's going to be another really strong year. I think they learned a lot from the exhibition last week. You play an SEC team in the exhibition, and, I mean, thrown to the wolves has been a theme of this program, so why not continue that? Seems like you kind of have to feel that way. Your first 11-on-11 action, which that's what that was for Alabama, and you're playing an SEC foe, but I think there's a lot to learn and a lot to gather about yourself from playing that game that I think is only going to help. And so you're going to see some of the improvements against DePaul here this Thursday, but it's still early in the season. So a lot of question marks still, a lot still unknown, and you're not going to have all of that down pat after one regular season matchup. But again, I think this team's a contender. I think they're confident. I think they've got a lot of fantastic talent up and down the roster sheet. And I don't know if writing them off as a one and done is necessarily the way to go from last year. I think they have the intangibles and the ability to get it done again this year.
Well, I'm really looking forward to being out there on Thursday. Let me encourage all the fans, all the viewers and listeners to be out there on Thursday as well. Look, it's a free event. It's very family friendly. You want to get out there and support a winner. I understand that soccer may not be the most popular sport in the West Alabama area, but they're still wearing Alabama across the front and they're working their tails off for you and really for the university and representing the university in a really high class fashion. So I want to encourage everybody to get out to watch the soccer events. We got 3 games in the month of August right here at home. DePaul on Thursday. You're playing Memphis at the end of the month on a Sunday, and then Miami on the last day of the month, August 31st. 7 o'clock for each of those games. 3 times this month, you can see them at the Alabama Soccer Stadium for free. 7 p.m. for each of those start dates. You want to take the little kids out there and really experience what you know college sports, college athleticism. I would highly encourage you guys to get out to the Alabama Soccer Stadium. It was a lot of fun. Last year, I came to the very, very last game, and it was absolutely packed. I think, I want, I hope, I wish, I am encouraging the Alabama fan base to get to that level at the early part of the season, not the end of the season. I mean, the end of the season was great. It was a lot of fun. But let's give these ladies and give this team, give the program the support that they deserve at the early part of the year. They're coming off a successful year and wanting to build off that. We should respond from the Alabama fan base, from an Alabama standpoint, respond accordingly. Well, let's kind of – you want to chime in on that, please?
Yeah, and if you think it doesn't make a difference – I mean, don't take it from me. It absolutely makes a difference. The players talked a lot last season about the importance of this environment and not only how much they love playing in front of these packed houses and playing for these Alabama fans that they really are so proud to go play for, but also the difference in the game environment that it's making and how much more difficult it's making life for these other teams. So if you don't think it makes a difference, try it for yourself and see where you're wrong. It's a fantastic environment. When I mean, the place was bumping, especially in the NCAA tournament last year. And that stuff matters. That's part of what makes collegiate athletics so great, is that stuff like that matters. Home field advantage is a real thing. And you can be a part of that.
Be a part of it. You can try it out for free. That's the thing. It won't cost you anything except your time. And I imagine once you get out there and see the Alabama across the chest and hear the yay Alabama, you'll get into it and enjoy it. And the ladies are good. They're good. They play a pressing style, so they're not really sitting back.
They score a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. A couple times I was there last year, and was fun last Tuesday against Tennessee, despite the draw for the result. I'm looking forward to being out there on Thursday. Well, let's get you out of here with a quick UFC preview over the weekend. It'd be a crime to have you on and not preview 292. Really, with the main event, Aljamain Sterling and Sean O'Malley. You've got a nice card on deck, a couple canceled fights, but give the people a quick preview on the bantamweight title fight.
Well, UFC Boston, they're back in Boston for the first time since 2019, and this has been really, really anticipated. I'm excited to see this atmosphere at the TD Garden. The Boston fight fans, they can get pretty crazy. The bantamweight title fight, I think that a lot of people look at it and they see this as Sean O'Malley's crowning moment. And it's no secret. He's a guy that's had a lot of promotional backing. Dana White wants him to do well. The UFC brass wants him to do well. And here he is with his chance to face a guy that I think, through some circumstances that are largely out of his control, isn't really getting his flowers in Aljamain Sterling. I mean, most recent title defense against Henry Cejudo, a lot of people, including me, didn't score it for him. Before that, fought an injured TJ Dillashaw, who was essentially a lame duck with one good arm. And that's not Sterling's fault that Dillashaw comes into that fight injured. It's not Sterling's fault that the UFC chose to book him against Cejudo, who's a smaller guy for the weight class, coming off a three-year kind of retirement. Maybe just wanted a bigger contract. Lots of speculation on that. These things are not Sterling's fault. And I think that no matter what, he's risen to the adversity. He's a very good fighter. Some of the most underrated ground game in the entire UFC. And you could take that to the bank. He's gotten better in every fight, which is the champion you've kind of got to do. But it says something about him and his lack of complacency. He didn't just get the belt and check out. He candidly probably would have lost by now if he did that. But he hasn't. John Anik is over here saying he's the bantamweight GOAT, and Dominic Cruz fans have taken some real exception to that. But I think if he wins this fight this weekend, he's got a really strong argument. He's facing a guy in Sean O'Malley that is kind of a promotional golden boy. But to preview the fight itself, I think this is an intriguing clash of styles. Like I said, Sterling's a guy that's got some of the most underrated grappling in the entire promotion, and I stand on that no matter what.
Oh, yes.
But Sean O'Malley, on the other hand, is a fantastic striker. He's got great hand speed. He's got big power for the division. Sean is not a small bantamweight. People like my dad, they watch fights and they see what the weight class is, and they're like, there's no such thing as a big bantamweight. But Sean O'Malley is on the bigger side of the bantamweight class. But this is a title fight. This is a whole different world. Sean has not necessarily been in those deep waters, with the exception of his last fight against Petr Yan in Abu Dhabi. That was like his toughest fight to date and one of his only fights against a ranked opponent. I mean, a year ago at this time, he'd just come off beating Chris Moutinho, who I wish was on this card just because he's training up there sometimes as part of the New England cartel, and he's really popular up there. But he was not a top five bantamweight. He was two and done in the UFC. And that's like three fights ago for Sean O'Malley, four fights ago. So there are questions about the levels of competition that he's facing. He went after Chris Moutinho and fought Holly and Paiva, who I really like, but who's a flyweight. And he knocked him out in the first round, but that's exactly what he was supposed to do. And then he had the fight against Pedro Munhoz get stopped with an eye poke. And then he had the Jan fight, and it was huge. And he won. I think Sean won. A lot of people scored that fight for Jan. But the experience is going to matter. I think Sterling is going to win the fight. I don't know if he finishes him, but if he does, it's going to be on the ground. I think Sterling's going to win. I think what Sterling's done throughout his reign as champion is going to bode well. But on the other hand, if Sean can start stringing together combinations, who knows what's going to happen. Aljo's dealt with great strikers, but not necessarily as much with power. Especially not when he's fighting a guy that's coming up from flyweight, basically. A guy that's had like three fights at bantamweight. Or a guy in TJ Dillashaw that's got one arm. Has he dealt with power like that? Who knows? It's a very interesting fight. I feel it could go either way, but I think Sterling's going to win.
It's going to be a lot of fun on Saturday, UFC 292. Am I right? Yeah, 292 on Saturday up there. You can order it on ESPN Plus and all their pay-per-view avenues by. Or what you can do is follow Real WB Miller and keep up with all the action. If you don't want to buy the card, you just want to hit the highlights, follow Real WB Miller on the Twitter machine. My man will be tweeting out the highlights, letting you know who's winning and who's losing, and kind of all the big action that happens on Saturday. Will, why don't you tell the people in your own words how they can support you, and really anything else you want to let off your chest before we get out of here?
Well, at Real WB Miller on Twitter, like you've mentioned, Joe, you can keep up not only with my work, but also with my fight takes. You can keep up with my sports takes, whether it be football, baseball, basketball, whatever. If you want the most random sports thoughts imaginable, again, I am your one-stop destination. I would go so far as to say the premier destination on West Alabama Twitter for that sort of thing. Really, really exciting time for the fall. I'm ready to get back in the saddle, like I've said. I'm excited to kind of be back in the groove working. And I hope everybody can keep up with that. I'm really excited about what I'm going to be able to put out and the opportunities that I'm able to have. So stay tuned to that at Real WB Miller on Twitter. And yes, I will be tweeting about UFC 292, UFC Boston, whatever you want to call it. ESPN Plus pay-per-view. Great card. I really think even though it's had some cancellations, it has the potential to be one of the highlights of the year. So I am really excited about that, and school getting underway soon. So summer's basically over. Hope everybody's had a great one, but I'm looking forward to these last few days.
Absolutely. Will Miller, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Will, let's shut it down here on the program by thanking everybody joining us in the comments today. We had our friend Miss Julene Lee, Mr. Raheem Barnes hanging out with us, Jeff Wade. I appreciate you watching us each and every day. And my man Stingray joining us. Make sure you listen to the Stingray Show on Tide 100.9 for all of his great coverage. We appreciate everybody listening to us on Facebook or watching us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, or listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on Amazon. You can always find the show, The Joe Gaither Show, on Bama Central. Just search it up any of your podcast platforms. You can find me at JoeGaither6 on all the social medias. Leave us a comment, question, query, or complaint. Jump into the show. You can even leave a comment after the show is already over. It'll show up there, and I'll interact with you as well. We appreciate everybody joining us and watching us. Tell a friend about the program. Pay attention to Bama Central about 4:30 today. My man Austin Hannon, Katie Windham, myself, and who knows who else from Bama Central will be in the Naylor Stone media room listening to the head coach Nick Saban talking about today's practice. A little bit cooler temperatures today. The guys are getting started in half an hour, and we will be over listening to coach Nick Saban in about 2.5 hours. So pay attention to us on Twitter, listen to us on all the platforms, and follow us at BamaCentral.com. We're your Sports Illustrated home for all things Alabama Crimson Tide. For Will Miller, Will, thank you so much for joining us today. For you guys, the listener, the viewer, we love you so much. We appreciate you. You guys are the reason we do everything. I am Joe Gaither. This was another edition of The Joe Gaither Show right here on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.